LinkedIn News.
Hi, I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Welcome to This Is Working, the podcast, where my colleague Nina Melendez and I discuss a conversation I had on my video series, This Is Working. Nina and I take that conversation, we dissect it, and we extract our top takeaways for you, the listener. Today, we're talking about citizen-led strategizing, whether companies are adequately prepared for the future, and finally, whether leaders should have term limits. We're going to get to all of that in a second. Stick around.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. Imagine growing a business with high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, and wildly happy customers. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Here's Nina now. Hey, Nina.
Hey, Dan. Dan, I know you love stats.
I love stats.
While I was researching today's conversation, I came across some really cool data that surprised me, so I want to share it with you. Replacing an employee can cost up to 2 times that employee's salary. So if someone is being hired at $100,000 a year, replacing them can be up to $200,000 a year, which is really expensive.
It's crazy. I mean, and I'm not sure if that counts the time it takes to go and find somebody and the lost productivity that happens when they're not actually doing the job. I think even without knowing that data, it makes sense to me. This is why employers just hang their heads when someone announces they're quitting. And I think employees forget this sometimes. They're like, oh, you know, I'm just going to go out there, quit, and no one's going to care if I quit or not. But it's like, if you're an employer, you're like, oh, no, please don't quit.
This makes so much sense because I used to have a boss that every time I'd ask to meet with her, she would go, are you quitting?
I do that.
Do you?
Every time I get a note from someone like, can we talk for 10 minutes tomorrow? I'm like, are you quitting? Just tell me.
Just
tell me today. I need to know now.
So you recently spoke with PwC's Bob Moritz, who has thought a lot about this because the company has this sort of flow where it's all about allowing people to leave.
Exactly. You come in and they want you to stay, but they totally understand if you don't stay. Maybe you go work for a company that you're auditing. Maybe you go take your skills and you go somewhere else and then you hire PwC.
Yeah.
That's sort of the way the consulting world works. And so they have to really have figured out retention and replacement. It is a big part of running a successful consulting or auditing company.
And then building also the employees so that they are well-skilled so that when they do go out into the world outside of PwC, they're successful.
Exactly. You want them to look great.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about who Bob Moritz is, Dan.
Well, I was excited to talk to Bob because this is the launch of our 8th annual Top Companies list, which looks at the best companies for people's careers. So the idea is, what are the companies where if you work for them 1 year, 2 year, 15 years, your career is going to be in a better place than it would have been had you not worked for them.
Hmm.
PwC is number 5 on this year's list. Bob is the global chairman of the company. So he leads the International Network's leadership team, sets the strategy, and he has spent his entire career at PwC. Joined in 1985, became partner in 1995. He spent 3 years working for the company in Japan.
Yeah, and PwC is much bigger than I thought it was. It's got offices in 151 countries and roughly 350,000 employees. So that is a lot.
It's a big place.
It's a big, yeah.
Yep. And he is, we're going to talk about this, but he is finishing up his term. So not only was this a chance to talk to Bob about how he runs PwC, but as he's about to leave, how does he think about the company he's leaving behind? For PwC, they have employees who are all around the world. They are working inside companies. They're working at headquarters. They're being assigned to different companies. Bob and I talked a lot about what it takes to make sure people have buy-in, that they understand what PwC is trying to accomplish, and not just buy-in, but that they are the ones coming up with a strategy for where PwC needs to go. And it goes back to your question about retention. We're going to talk about it in a second, but first, let's hear Bob's strategy.
What we find from a retention perspective, people want to understand the strategy. They want to actually recreate the work and way it's done. So they want to be part of that process, not be told what to do. So you also have to, as a lesson learned, make sure middle management, senior management is willing to see the change that's coming up from the bottom from our people as well. And that'll actually enhance the credibility of what we're doing, the satisfaction our people have, and then the willingness to continue to reinvest and apply those learnings on a going forward basis. The second thing I would say is there is a business benefit for this, as well as a societal benefit for this. And you actually have to do both. You shouldn't be one or the other at one or at the expense of the other. There's a power in the end statement. I know for us at PwC, when we allowed this to happen and created the environment to be successful in this space, the one thing we found was the ROI was faster than we even thought. Why was it faster? Because human nature is such that if anything's forced down from the top, you're going to get some resistance. It wasn't created here. It's not good enough for me. It doesn't work for me, whatever the case may be. But if you allow for it to gravitate from the bottom up, we call it citizen-led, there's a lot more speed in both people's willingness to do something and try to do some things differently, skill themselves up, and then apply those learnings.
So, Dan, when you hear citizen-led strategizing, what do you think of? What pops into your head?
Bob Moritz pops into my head. I've never heard that term before anywhere else. It's another way of saying that you have to let your employees help come up with the strategy. That if they are not the ones who are coming up with the plans and ideas and proposals to be able to get you to the next step, it doesn't matter. You know, you're never going to have the best ideas coming out of 20 people in a boardroom. You might be able to say, this is the direction we want the company to go in. But everyone at the ground level, they know exactly what's going on, what's working and what's not working. So I think it makes a ton of sense, this idea of make sure that your people feel like they are the ones, not just feel it, but that they are the ones who are helping define the programs that will get you to the next step.
I love how you said human nature is such if anything's forced, you're going to get resistance.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of a conversation we had several months ago about how to get people to align with you. If you're a leader, how to get the folks in the room to kind of come on board with an idea or a plan that you have. And you told me about a boss who would go to the whiteboard and he had this whole like really neat semi-manipulative strategy. And it works and it's important to have.
Yeah. In a coming episode, we're going to talk to Ed Bastian, the CEO of Delta. And one of the things that Ed did coming out of Delta's bankruptcy was started bringing 200 to 300 Delta employees together. He would have these, it's a similar sort of citizen-led, it was more like a citizen-led gripe session. But he would go around from airport to airport and location to location and meet with people, and he would have them tell them their ideas. And he heard a lot before. Delta was a very micromanaging company. It was the people at the top explaining exactly what to do and the employees feeling totally disconnected. This got them to buy in. He talks about how he learned a lot from them about what needs to get changed, processes, tools that needed to change that could make the airline more effective, that make people happier, happier employees, make for happier flyers. So it all comes from getting people to buy in to the street. You don't just get great ideas out of people. You get them to be great employees, and your customers notice that.
The United Airlines CEO said he did that as well, remember?
Yes, he would walk around with an iPad. He had like the dumb shit we do list.
Yeah.
And he would write down, employees would just complain to him about things.
Yeah, they even had a website where employees could just go
right,
and write it all out.
Yeah, Oscar Munoz.
Yeah, I have never been part of a team that does that. Have you ever been part of like an organization that did that?
No, in fact, in both cases, while I was listening to CEOs talk about these sort of citizen-led projects or massive gripe sessions, in my head, I'm just thinking, how does that not turn into a disaster? How do you not just get a bunch of people in a room complaining and you're just standing in the front having people lob complaints at you? So I'm sure, and it's a question I haven't been able to dive into yet, so I need to do that in a future episode, but I don't know how you run a successful session like that. Because it has to be productive, I think. If it's not productive, I don't know what the point of it is.
So, you know, we have this video series called Catalyst. The day after we publish, we always do a postmortem. And a postmortem is a look back, you know, on how did we do, what worked, what didn't. And the minute it starts to venture into territory of we're all just griping because things didn't go, it was tough or something, I always bring it back to, okay, well, then what's the solution? What is the next step? And I think it's great because people feel heard, and then also people feel like they're part of the solution to make it better next time.
Yep.
Because ultimately, if they're complaining, it's because they don't like it and they want it to be different. So help me make it different.
One of the things Bob talks about is that you don't want to just be in a room and have people complain. You have to actually push them into action, and you've got to give them the ability to be able to act on whatever it is that they're saying.
And the time.
So I love this part about, he talked about building skills in the workforce. and know when they have to build skills. What Bob talks about is, as a manager, you have to both listen to that and say, we are going to carve time out, or we're going to find a way for you to be able to do the things that you're saying have to be done. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Bob Moritz.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff. The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and so many tools to keep track of. Doing business can be hard, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot. Their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
And we're back.
PwC did a survey of CEOs, and to the question of how many of you believe that your companies can survive another decade, 45% said they don't think that they have what it takes. And that's actually up from 39% from the year before. And he had an actually really interesting perspective on that data. Let's take a listen.
Let me first start with another premise. You focused rightly so on the 45% that truly believe they won't be around in 10 years unless they change radically. Let's not forget the 55% that don't believe they need to change. And that's probably more troubling because the world's moving so fast that those 55% haven't figured out that they are going to have to change. It's either going to be forced on them by activism or otherwise, or they're going to eventually catch up. And that's the point when you apply it at the individual level, is teaching people and enabling them to understand the larger mega trends that are happening around the world and the implications that it has to work, type of work, and then the individual, that awareness, that awakening is very important. No one's going to want to jump in and try to enhance themselves unless they understand there's a risk. Now, what's interesting is if you go back 5 years or so, everybody was worried I was going to be replaced by robots. I'm going to argue today everybody's starting to worry about the AI and the generative AI piece as well now in terms of, will that actually replace my job? And the reality is, if people are understanding that risk and you're actually getting them to be less stressed about that risk so they're not paralyzed by it and not sure what to do, and get that to be a two-way conversation with your current employer and themselves in terms of what can we collectively both do together so you are better equipped for that purpose, that's one of the major objectives you have. It takes the stress level down in an organization, and it takes the stress level down on the individual level.
I found that data terrifying.
Yeah.
I've been quoting it nonstop since I saw it. It is, I think that for CEOs to say, like, I don't think my company's going to be around for 10 more years, I just expect them to assume their company's going to be around forever. And if you look at what's happened in the news the week that we're taping this, with GE splitting into three companies, I mean, GE is basically gone. That company lasted a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
It is now three mini versions of itself. There are not going to be a lot of companies, it sounds like, that can even last as long as GE lasted. And Bob's response to this was, oh, yeah, those...
It's not the 45% we have to worry about. It's the 55%.
Everyone is screwed, was basically what he was saying. Maybe screwed's too strong, but it's, you know, everyone needs to be worried. We are facing a world where the tools that we use to do our job and the kind of competition we have faced and how fast we have to move, it's all changing. It's all accelerating, thanks largely to AI. And so CEOs need to be not just aware of this, but acting on it.
Yeah. It's a really tough situation because the technology is advancing faster than we can. So in a way, so many leaders are just learning on the job because whatever they learned before no longer applies. That's how quickly things are changing.
I think one of the roles of a CEO is you kind of always have to be paranoid. I guess you always have to be thinking about what are the challenges that are going to make my company not survive.
He talked about helping employees understand larger mega trends. How do you do that? How does a leader, how does a manager make sure that their workers or their reports are understanding the broader landscape and what might be coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, well, this kind of goes back to that citizen-led strategizing, which is, I think, part of what you want to do is find champions for each of those areas in your company already. I mean, it really, I think it makes much more sense to find people who are passionate about this or who are messing around with this technology or who want to move to a country that's going to lead you to the future. And you start giving them what they need to be able to be successful. You start having them proselytize what they're learning. You start building up support around them. You celebrate the success that they're seeing. So in the case of AI, there are teams, I'm sure, who are inside every company who are messing around with this and trying to find ways to make it work for them, to make them, their team more successful or whatever project they're on move faster. As a CEO or as a leader, I think you have to find those people, especially if you think that's the future. Find those people, learn as much as you can from them, celebrate their wins, broadcast it so that everyone else knows they should be doing what those people are doing or learning from them. And you want to just shine a bright spotlight on the people who are working on the black swan areas.
Yeah.
I just think that's the only way to do it. Because what else are you going to do? You're going to bring in a consultant. You're going to send out white papers. Like, people are going to ignore.
No one likes that. Yeah.
No one likes that. You want to hear from someone like you.
Yep.
So I think you need the citizens to lead here too. Nina, do you know that thought experiment, the ship of Theseus?
It's something about boards replacing the boards of the ship, right?
Yes, the idea is basically if you have a ship and it's getting worn out and you replace it board by board, and eventually you have a ship that is 100% new boards, is it still the same ship?
Mm.
And I think about this all the time with this question of, like, are these companies going to disappear within 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
The company might disappear as we know it, but it's also possible that it just gets totally reinvented. Like, you have to be Theseus in this case, replacing all of the boards in your company. So there was the World Economic Forum did a study a while ago that found that 60% of jobs in 2018 didn't even exist in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
We're all doing jobs, but we're all doing different jobs.
Right.
So if you think about, well, the company is going to go away, it's possible the company goes away, but the company is also then reborn in another way. Your ship still keeps on going. It's just a very different set of jobs that power your ship now. I think that's what's happening here with AI and with a lot of these CEOs wondering about whether their company survive. It's not just a question of survival. It's, can my company survive the way it looks today? And I think their companies in 10 years are going to look very different than their companies look today.
I also think that, to be honest and fair, that there's also going to be complete obliteration of certain companies.
Yeah.
There are certain industries and companies that are going to be completely obsolete. And between what happened from 1940 to 2018, several wars, yes, but the internet
it
was invented. And it completely obliterated certain industries and certain jobs that were needed. And like you said, for AI, it's not just how can companies reinvent themselves and put new boards on their ship, but it's whether we're going to even need that ship.
Got it.
At all.
Can you replace your boards faster than the water gets into your ship? That's basically the key.
Yeah.
Speaking of ship captains, this is Bob's last hurrah. So he is leaving. PwC has a term limit. He's hitting his term limits. When we were talking to him, as a matter of fact, he was about to go into a meeting with other people and introduce his successor. I love talking to leaders who are leaving their posts because they can get a little self-reflective. And so Bob had a few thoughts. Kind of the coulda, woulda, you know, look back moments. Let's listen to what he had to say.
The first and foremost I'm going to say is you got to create and surround yourself with the right people. The creation of your team is so important. It's not only the team itself, it's the individuals on the team, and then how do all the puzzle pieces fit together. One of the things I've always thought about in the creation of a team is, can they do the job today or grow into the job? That's one element of assessment. The second thing is, and I think this has become even more prevailing in today's world with social media and otherwise, you better develop some thick skin. Because the reality is, no matter what you choose to do, there's somebody out there that doesn't like it. And I still remember when I got into my very first major leadership team role, an experienced leader came to me and said, let me be clear. Every day you're going to upset somebody. They're not going to like you. Get ready for that. And you're going to have to make the tough choices, because honestly, if you're not dealing with the tough choices and you're dealing with the easy stuff, that means your team's not doing what they need to be doing. They should be making those easier decisions. It's the hard stuff. And oh, by the way, it's probably the lesser of two evils when you're making those decisions in terms of the risk profile and the opportunity and the upside potential. So get ready for that. And look, I see that from every blog I put out there on LinkedIn and otherwise, in terms of the different points of view that come out, which is actually good and informative to understand society at large. So that's a big lesson learned. And the last one I would say is focus in terms of what you can do, control it, but stay focused on it, because there's too many distractions in the world. And again, I'll give you an anecdotal story. I was invited to a board meeting a couple of months ago, and they asked me just to observe and then the next morning respond back. And they said, Bob, what's your feedback on our discussions? And I said, well, honestly, the first thing is you guys spent a good portion of yesterday talking about stuff you can't control. And that's time that's important to scenario plan for, but you're missing the big things you can control and do something different on. And this goes back to disrupt yourselves before you become disrupted. So focus, get a great team in place, and get ready for all aspects of negativity that comes, but be true to yourself, authentic to yourself, and make sure your leadership team is aligned around the execution. Those are the three or four things I would point to as really important as lessons learned over the last X number of years of my career.
Dan, what part of this resonated with you?
That idea of focusing on what you can control. I think that's a really important one. It is so easy to be distracted by everything that can happen and what competitors are doing and what forces are conspiring against you. But you really can only control what you can control. Mm-hmm. And this idea of playing your own game, I think, is a really important one, and of making sure that you are doing the best that you can, but not just constantly reacting to the market or to the competition.
Mm-hmm. That's a good life lesson, too.
Yeah. It's much easier said than done.
For sure.
What resonated for you?
I really liked this idea of developing some thick skin.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. I just, you know, you don't necessarily think of CEOs as having to do that, but they are under so much scrutiny. And yeah, they have to deal with the fact that maybe they make some bad calls and they just have to be okay getting criticized or being put under the spotlight a lot.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're all humans. And so I think this idea of it's not just social media, as Bob calls out, but your own employees complaining.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, you know, everything is on your plate. And I think that I've always wondered this when talking to CEOs is you can't really like shoot the shit with them about their companies because they're responsible for everything.
Yeah.
And so if you're like, oh, I had a bad experience, it's not like they're like, oh, yeah, that stinks. Like, they kind of have to act on it.
Right.
You know, it's up to them. In the end, this is all on their plate. And so I think this idea of, I think you're right, having a thick skin and understanding that you just need to like what to take action on, what you can delegate to someone else, what you let roll off your back. That's got to be the only way you can figure that out, I assume, is to sit in the chair and figure it out.
I was going to say, I think it's really interesting about when you get criticized, what is it that you can take and what do you not take? There's a little bit of truth to everything. So how much of it do you act on and what is it that you just put away? What about you? Do people come and complain about your leadership to you, to your face?
I think there's nothing to complain about.
Would you like me to start a website?
Please. This has turned into a different kind of podcast now.
Okay, last question for you. Should companies have more term limits for leadership?
That's a great question. I would say I'm anti-term limits.
You are?
I am, yeah. I just think...
Says the man who's been here 12 years.
Exactly. This is why I paused on the answer. I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to say anything. As I go on my 13th year, I am not sure that I'm a fan of term limits. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you get out of... I feel like sometimes people are just hitting their stride after 4 years, eight years. And as we talked a lot about in this episode, companies change. And people change. And so I think that instead of having a number that says this is when you have to go, I'd much prefer it to be based on
performance. Maybe, yeah.
I mean, I just think that like you can still be a strong performer and have been around for decades, and you can be a terrible performer and only been around for 3 years. And I just don't know if the number matters that much. What do you think?
I'm inclined to say yes to term limits, because I think what happens is that if you get someone into a certain position, they can kind of become a dinosaur in a way. And like we were saying, because things are changing so quickly, you need someone who has that adaptable mindset. And if you have someone who comes in and doesn't really have that adaptable mindset, then you're sort of at a loss.
Yeah.
And then you can, when someone is in a position of power for that long, you can end up surrounded by an echo chamber. And so are there people who are going to really hold you accountable to your performance, or are folks just going to be yes men?
I think that's probably one of the biggest dangers, is that the longer you stay around, the more your people are all over the company.
Right.
And you then have, it's not just you who's been in that position for
right.
decades and decades, but it's your policies are always being carried out.
Right.
So if you don't have term limits, how do you make sure the change is happening, that you have an ear for new ideas, that
right.
you're letting new people have the room to grow and to be able to get some of these top positions, get into leadership positions? It's difficult, but
yeah.
I would be against anything that's just number-based.
Right.
We would love to hear from you, the listener, on your take on term limits. Should we see them more? Do you wish they existed in your company? Let us know on LinkedIn using the hashtag #ThisIsWorking. You might hear your contributions on an upcoming episode.
And please share this podcast episode with a friend and review it. It helps new listeners find us. If you'd like to hear the full conversation between Dan and Bob, check the show notes. We'll link to it there. This Is Working is a LinkedIn editorial production. Our production team includes Sarah Storm, Stephen Valdivia, Asaf Kidron, Taisha Henry, Andres Cordona, and Lolia Briggs. Joe DiGiorgi mixes our show. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. And our head of original programming is Courtney Koop. I'm Nina Melendez, senior producer.
And I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Be well and stay curious.